Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday, the 17th of December. Very nice to have you with us on this Monday morning. Hopefully you had a lovely holiday, a rather dreary day today. At least it is here. I don't know where it is, how it is where you are, but according to the weather, it probably sucks there too. Now, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Hopefully, again, you had a lovely weekend, and we're getting in, honing in onto holiday time, so kind of our last full week for a little while, yeah. So it'll be nice to see what... Hey, buddy. see what happens here, all right?
Yo, Ann.
Okay, good. Libby Post is here. Libby Post is a political consultant. She is a regular on our program. We are thrilled to have her. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
So you said it sucks. That's not one of the seven words you can't say?
No.
Oh.
Oh, God, that's not even close.
Okay.
No, if you were having a Pepsi-Cola and you had a straw in it, you would be sucking out the Pepsi-Cola.
Yeah, there you go.
No, no, that's not.
Okay,
oh, come on, Libby, go on a school bus. You could hear a lot more words.
Oh,
my God.
I know.
You get to like 230,000 before you get to that.
Okay, well, you know, we're watching The Amazing Mrs. Maisel and the language there for us.
There you go. So. There you go. See? we're nothing with compared to that. Joe Bonilla is here. We're thrilled. He has not been with us for a little while, and we're thrilled that he is here. Good morning. He's a communications consultant. He is all over the place. He has a very busy schedule, and we're thrilled that he could fit us in this morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to have you here, as always. Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson is here. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
It's good to have you. And WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
I'm with Sarah. I'm great also.
Excellent. You have your thinker tie on. Is that a Rodin tie? Is that what that is?
You may
the
think
thinker.
Thinker.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm always thinking.
You are always thinking. I'll give that. All right. This is apropos of absolutely nothing. I just want people to be aware that if I'm very slow on the draw today, it's because I'm using I left my laptop at home.
Oh.
So I'm using a borrowed laptop, and I have no idea what I'm doing. So if I say, oh, now we're going to talk about this story, and I don't do it right away, it's because I don't know where the buttons are. But I think I put everything up. See, I don't know how to shut that noise off either. All right, thank you, Libby. Anyway, we have a lot to talk about. We are very excited because, as you know, it was a busy weekend. there's always something going on. So the big question this week, as we start this week before the holidays, is: will there be a government shutdown? Just days before a deadline to avert a partial government shutdown, President Trump, Democratic leaders, and the Republican controlled Congress are at a stalemate over the president's border wall. That's right. Correct. But House Republican leaders are also confronting a more mundane and awkward problem. Their vanquished and retiring members are sick and tired of Washington and don't want to show up anymore to vote. Call it the revenge of the lame ducks. Many lawmakers relegated to cubicles as incoming members take their offices have been skipping votes in the week since House Republicans were swept from power in the midterm elections, and Republican leaders are unsure whether they will ever return. It is perhaps a fitting end to a Congress that has showcased the untidy politics of the Trump era. Hey, you voted me out. I am going to stay in Cleveland. Even if the president ultimately embraces a solution that avoids a shutdown, House Republican leaders do not know whether they will have the votes to pass it.
Schumer says they haven't got the votes in either the Senate or the House.
That's amazing, isn't it?
In order to do this. That's it.
In reading that last night, the thing that immediately came to my mind, a question for you, sir, is it would seem to me that that would be a problem in a lame duck year. All, you know, a regular problem, but I guess it's because we're facing a shutdown, right?
Yeah, I think the shutdown is so interesting to me in that Donald Trump has shown that he doesn't give a whit about the poorest people in our country or the people who are suffering the most. And so to him, no big thing. He's got Mar-a-Lago. It'll be a distraction from his political and legal problems. Sure. Do I think that this guy is capable of doing it? Yes. And one other thing, while I have this the benefit of this microphone, and that is I've moved Rudy Giuliani up from the third worst prison in the country to the second, because his defense this weekend of Trump and of what he was doing, it was so ill-placed, so badly said, that one has a feeling that this guy has no ethical standards at all.
Oh, the idea over his dead body, you know.
Yeah. I won't let him testify over my dead body. Yeah.
Right. It makes wonder.
Help me out here. So has the president cooperated in any way, shape, or form with the special counsel's office?
Well, yeah. He has answered a few of the perfunctory questions. That's what he's done.
Or he had his attorneys answer them.
Or he had his attorneys to answer
them. But the one-on-one meeting, we didn't know if that was ever going to happen anyway, right? And now it's not going to happen.
We were all pretty sure it wasn't going to happen.
Right. Yeah. So I guess this brings us...
Because it's a perjury trap, don't you see?
Right.
Now, my condition, my sense of things are that you can't have a perjury trap if you don't perjure yourself. He thinks that Giuliani says it's a perjury trap, and that's why he's not going to let him in there.
Although he's doing a great job of laying the foundation for his perjury on Twitter.
He really does. Yeah.
His tweets contain admissions. Sure. And he doesn't seem to appreciate the legal significance of that.
Well, I don't think he understands the legal significance of anything.
No. Yeah. And I wonder if the government shuts down, does that mean Mueller's investigation stops?
Oh, well, there's a question.
Or does
I love
that keep
questions
going?
Like that. I wish we had a lawyer that we could ask.
I bet you they'd work for free. I mean, they've brought in more money than the investigation has.
Yeah, like
cost
$47 million,
right.
And it's only cost 20-something.
So maybe they can just use some of that money.
That's what I was thinking.
Right, you know,
they can self-fund.
And, you know, he went off. Trump went off after the Saturday Night Live cold open.
Yeah, he did.
It was a wonderful life without Trump as president. It was hilarious. And he's like saying that SNL is just a branch of the news.
And of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, and should be investigated.
Right, should be investigated.
Should
he
be
can't.
Investigated.
Yeah, there's a new hashtag that says Lock Lorne Up.
Oh, my. Really?
Lorne Michaels, the longtime executive producer and showrunner of Saturday Night Live. So where are we here? So the uncertainty does not end there. With funding for parts of the government, like the Department of Homeland Security, set to lapse at midnight on Friday, Mr. Trump and top Republicans appear to have no definite plan to keep the doors open. It's clear that as Democrats uniformly oppose the president's demand for $5 billion for his border wall, any bill that includes that funding cannot pass the Senate and might face defeat in the House as well. So if that is the line, am I cynical to think that they won't let the government shut down on a holiday weekend?
The they in this case meaning Trump people?
I would think all parties involved, but yes, including the Trump people.
Well, I think right now the big problem for them is that Trump is getting the blame. He is getting the blame for doing that. So the Democrats don't have a thing to worry about. They just sit tight. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
They just sit tight.
Absolutely.
So now does Trump care that people are going to suffer as a result of this?
No.
As I said before, I don't think so.
No, he's never cared about that.
But he will see it as a distraction.
And there was an interesting article in The Atlantic about the cruelty of these people, and that's really their guiding principle. You know, we can say they're evil, and that's like, you know, Cruella de Vil and all that sort of stuff. But they do revel in their cruelty and in making other people's lives miserable. And there are a certain amount of people who revel and who love the fact that they're being cruel.
Yeah, just think about this, Libby, for 1 second. I'm sorry for interrupting. But
no kidding,
just the SNAP program.
Right.
Just the SNAP program is so kids are not going to be able to be fed.
To eat, right.
Well, and I saw a recent poll from The Economist that said that actually 75% of Americans favor immigration, are in favor of immigrants and their contributions to our country, not just immigration generally. And that's up from 60-something percent, the low 60s in 2012. So it's and then he trots out Stephen Miller with his spray-on hair.
Oh, yeah, I saw
for
that.
To defend the border wall and the government shutdown, saying things like, we need to be able to retain our sovereign our role as a sovereign country and have rules about immigration. Well, there's a whole book on immigration. We have immigration rules. We don't need a border wall in order to control migration. So I think they're in an unpopular spot is what I'm saying. I think Alan, that you put it well.
There are a lot of people who think that Trump could win another term.
Well, here's
by
the thing.
By following the same playbook, which you're referencing now, that has worked well, he thinks, and it has worked well because it got him to be president of the United States.
But here's the thing. You have the optics of a president going away on a 16-day vacation right. to Mar-a-Lago, and if you have the shutdown, you have nearly 900,000 federal workers out of work during the holiday season. We're going into the official, you know, basically the campaign beginning for the 2020 election. So the optics don't really benefit him, but more importantly, this is, again, another example of why he just doesn't care.
You know, he seems to respond to criticism, but way too late, it seems. There was a bizarre moment. I don't know how many people saw it last week, but he took a lot of heat on Veterans Day for not going to the event in France. Then he came home and didn't do anything at Arlington, and took a tremendous amount of heat. So then last Thursday, I think,
randomly.
He just randomly drove over there. There was nobody there. He ended up like finding a groundskeeper, talked to them for a couple minutes, laid a wreath, got back in the car and left. It was bizarre. It was really strange. And it seems they were saying, well, that is a response to the criticism that he received. But it just seemed like such a strange thing to do without any setup of, oh, let us honor our fallen soldiers.
Well, the other thing is that because he screwed it up so badly the first time, nobody is going to believe he went over there the other day out of real respect. They're going right. to just right. say, you're just saying he's trying to make it up.
Right. Well, yeah, but you would think even if you do that, you sort of put a little show into it and make it an event, you know?
Right. But it would have to, he would have to be empathetic. That's the issue.
That's the baseline. Right. That's the baseline.
He would have to go there and show some empathy and show some real concern for these people who died in service of their country. And he does not have that capacity.
His ghostwriter said that.
Yeah.
I read a quote from his ghostwriter.
Tony Schwartz.
Yes, yeah. That he has no, he doesn't have any self-awareness or any capacity for empathy.
Right.
He's just constantly winning.
Right.
That's
and it. He's a narcissist, and narcissists aren't empathetic. And it's just...
Okay, so what happens to our government this week? Anybody want to weigh in on this?
I mean, this might be the answer to the Mueller investigation question. You'll have essential functions that have to stay in place during the shutdown. Like the borders don't just close, presumably. And the national security, anything that's related to national security will keep functioning, right? We've seen this before. But the unfortunate thing is that hardworking Americans right around the holidays are going to be furloughed for an indefinite period of time.
I think that they'll pass a stopgap measure.
Another CR, you
think? Yeah, I think they'll do a continuing resolution, pass a stopgap measure. His numbers are tanking so incredibly.
I don't know about that, Libs. Not in terms of the, not in terms of that 40%.
Well, no, it's getting less now. It's going down.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's like 38, 37. So based on various polls and what people are supporting and not supporting. So I think that they'll pass a continuing resolution because the Republicans don't want this stink on them. And
will he sign a CR?
I think he'll have no choice.
And another question is, parallel thinking, what might happen with the Mueller investigation? Will they try to indict the president based on what's coming out of the Southern District, the smoking gun, putting Trump in the room where the Stormy Daniels payout happened? So, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that could happen this week that feed into one another.
Well, I may be wrong, and I've certainly been wrong many times in life. I don't think they're going to indict the president, and I don't think they're going to impeach the president. I think that the Democrats are fully aware that they're in great shape in terms of the people's disgust with this president, and they don't want to do a thing to screw it up. Now, there will be people who write to me this very morning saying, Alan, he needs to be indicted. Stop saying that the Democrats—well, my job is a— political watcher, political scientist, whatever you want to call it, is to say what is as opposed to what should be, and that's what is.
Keeping him in office will guarantee the Democrats take the Senate.
Sure.
That's the thing.
That's right.
You know.
And the presidency.
Right. And the presidency. You know, there's no choice about it. Now, if both Pence and Trump are, for however, thrown out, you know, we'll have President Pelosi.
Right.
Which would be very interesting.
You're not going to have President Pelosi.
Know,
forget
not.
That.
But I think, you know, not doing the impeachment, they can rattle that sword, but it'll be hard. It'll be hard to get the Senate to vote.
Oh, yeah. It'll be impossible right now.
So when we look at a shutdown, and, of course, a lot of this comes with about the wall almost solely, and with that base, is that worth all of the other possible collateral damage that you could cause?
Well, let's all try to remember that the last time Newt Gingrich did this, the Republicans got really slammed. And that same and that same thing would happen again here. And a lot of congressional Republicans have been talking to the news media, many of them off the record, about what a terrible move this would mean for the Republican Party. But, of course, we have to remember that Trump doesn't care a whit, second time I've used that word, a bit about what happens to his fellow Republicans. Just look what the guy did to John Faso. After Faso loses election because he's sticking with Trump on too many issues, he turns around and said it wasn't enough and he basically deserved to lose.
And if we put the best foot forward, Chuck Schumer made this point on Meet the Press on Sunday, which is they're not going to get the wall. They're not going to get the $5 billion for the wall.
It's
That's not going to happen. So what possible – you do wonder about what possible other thing that could come out of that suits both sides.
Well, I think they're still counting on being able to
compromise was the word I was searching for.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
No compromise on a wall. $0.
Well, except Sarah, and this is something that puzzles me, the Democrats have already offered, I think, $1.5 billion towards the wall.
Yeah, they got slammed for it.
Yeah, they should be saying, they've been saying you should get nothing. Their constituents are saying, don't give them anything.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But you have, I mean, I think that they're counting on being able to gin up that 25% of Americans who buy into the notion that immigrants are a threat to our national security, and that they'll be able to suppress enough of the rest of the vote that's surging, right? The blue wave, the blue flood. Mm-hmm. they're counting on being able to suppress that through the old tricks that they used in 2016.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. We know that there's no hiatus in trying to rig that vote.
Right, but the Band-Aid has been ripped off. I mean, people are seeing what's going on. They're seeing how they're trying to do this, and more people will be watching.
Well, what if we would ask the question, if you were a Louisiana voter, the kind of guy who votes for that guy Kennedy, who is the worst
right.
of the worst,
yes.
And so many
15
others,
seconds.
Whether they wouldn't be saying, hey, good for you, Trump, keep it up.
Well, there are plenty of people like that. Okay. Fine.
7 seconds. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue and we'll have more seconds right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Joe Bonilla, and Libby Post. Alan has a fistful of letters. We get to those, and then we'll move on to other cool stuff.
Here's a good letter from Vincent, who says, hello, panel. Alan is only partially correct about his 40% Donald Trump supporters. As a blue-collar guy, I can tell you firsthand there are many more closeted, in quotes, Trump supporters out there, men and women. I'm still shocked at how many Trump supporters I encounter on a daily basis. In fact, many of them are more ardent about their support of him now than ever before. 4! Have a beautiful day and a wonderful week. And that's from Vince in Kingston. Okay. I think he may have a point. Because, you know, there are some things that people don't tell to their pollsters or their mothers. They
That's
just,
true.
Yeah, they just
they hold back. They always do.
Yeah. Okay, and then David says, cost of a shutdown. Bugs me when I hear people say, let him shut down the government, then he has to deal with it. Yay. The national parks will still open one day. Mail will end up at its destination one day. But if you or I stop paying our bills, besides the penalties, the rate we could borrow at goes up. When the rate changes 1% on the trillions of debt the U.S. owes, it impacts everything that the country can do for generations. I would love to see a comparison of lowering rates in other countries like Japan or Germany. When anyone says they are willing to shut down the government, the question should be, how are you going to raise the funds to cover the cost that we are going to have to pay in the future? Okay. And then from Josh, a good Mulvaney letter. Hello, esteemed panel. On NPR this morning, Andrew Card said that Mulvaney being confirmed as chief of staff would remove him from a Senate-approved position, which is open to testifying before committees. Do you think this might be the reason for the, quote, terrible human being, Trump, picking him? Terrible human being is something he said. He had said earlier about Trump. So for you guys, what do you think? I think he just picked him because he was available and wanted the job and nobody else did.
Well, he was openly seeking the job, too, at one point earlier this year.
Yeah.
And it's interim.
Yeah.
It's acting. It's
for acting.
Well, right. Except that everybody who works for Trump is here in an interim position. And Jim in Montgomery, who quite frequently writes his good letters, panel, am I wrong, or is every previous government shutdown ended with Congress passing a law, paying the government workers for their lost time, essentially making the shutdown just an unscheduled paid vacation? Right around the holidays would be a nice time for that. And that's from Jim in Montgomery. Anybody know the answer? Because I don't.
I don't.
We were discussing it off air, but I don't know what the answer is.
I think New York has done something like that in the past, but I'm not even sure about that. George says, panel, there was a time when mafia blatantly extorted small businesses by telling them, quote, if you buy insurance from us now, your building probably won't burn down this weekend. How is this different from Trump telling us that the government will shut down if they don't buy what he's selling? And that's George in Stafford, Connecticut.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
I mean, he's acting more and more like a mafia boss.
His natural
every day.
Being.
Yeah, that's who he is.
Including embracing the terminology. He tweeted about rat this weekend.
Rats, that's right.
Okay, and then a very good letter, excellent letter from Tom in Queensbury, where everybody plays by the rules, who said, quote, Alan's right. That's why I like this letter.
Uh-huh.
Good morning, panel, and thank you. Sorry, Libby, Alan is correct. Real Clear Politics, a politically neutral site, confirms that the president's job approval has been stable since May at 43%, with disapproval stable at 52%. Not much change over the past 7 months, and that's thank you from Tom in Queensbury. But
look at polls on specific issues like the border wall, like immigration, his policy approval is much less.
And also you have a point in that when you look at various polls, they come up with various results.
Right.
So the one I keep seeing is 40% with 60% disapproving.
Yeah, it's all according to how the question's been asked.
Roger says 538 poll. 45's numbers have been consistently above 40% since mid-October. Per 438's, that's Trump weighted poll summary. If you 538, that's the culmination of all polls.
That's Nate Silver.
Yeah. If you look back a year, that value has taken a bumpy ride upward from about 37%, and that's from Roger in Pleasant Valley, where everybody smiles. And
sings about Sunday.
And a question from Joni via Twitter. If the government shuts down, does that mean the Mueller investigation shuts down, too? We have talked about that. I have a feeling we don't have to worry about that too much.
Yeah.
Right. I'm pretty sure they work on the weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nights, weekends, through vacation.
Yeah.
Take work home with them.
And let's not forget the point that we were making is it's cost $25 million, but they've brought in $43, $44 million. So
in fines.
We're making a profit.
But we don't know that everybody's paid the fines.
No, this is true.
Or will.
And recovered, I think it was also recovered tax evasion monies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Yeah, I don't know where they're pulling
that 40 plus million that has been committed. At least we know that.
Can you imagine if they got all Trump's tax evasion money? Imagine.
Several countries will be bankrupted.
Wow.
National debt would go down.
The wall. Yeah.
So while we were talking about the fact that about the chief of staff job, we should note another change in the administration happened over the weekend where the where Ryan Zinke, the head of the Interior Department, with some issues, let's say, investigative. He was being investigated on several fronts, and he is stepping down at, as the president said, at the end of the year, which is basically next week, and he'll be leaving. And
But first, he'll have a party. A holiday party.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Where he'll invite
his horse and 10-gallon hat.
And all the lobbyists.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's too bad Judith Enck is not here with us today because, as you know, she's been keeping us appraised of Mr. Zinke from day one. And
now
we've got to give her that.
The interesting thing here is that the number two guy whose name I have to find.
David Bernhardt?
Is supposedly worse.
Yeah, he's far worse.
In other words, that all of the action that was being taken under Zinke's name was actually been taken by this guy. So, you know, investigation, yes, but as far as the actual substance of the job, in most cases, that will continue.
He was considered the man behind the curtain.
That's
for
right.
Zinke. And the other thing to note with Zinke as well, as we recall from last year with the hurricane in Puerto Rico, that, you know, the Interior Department really just dropped. It was one of the departments that dropped the ball in Puerto Rico. They had awarded a $300 million energy contract to two guys in Montana, you know.
Right.
next door to Zinke.
Right, next door to Zinke. So the other name I've been hearing as well is Scott Walker. You know, which again, another quote unquote great pick, if you will. But again, we're getting now to the third and fourth string players here, you know, for every cabinet position.
But Joe, what would the optics be of course, they have about six different people, Heller from Nevada, people who lost. And you wonder whether his appointing these people would be seen as loyalty or whether it would be seen as picking a bunch of losers.
Well, that's the thing, is that a lot of these folks have lost, and it seems like, again, if somebody is not able to be confirmed, that's the other part of it, too. That some of these folks have been talked about, like a Walker or a Heller, could they be confirmed? I think.
Yeah, no, they could be confirmed.
Yeah.
They'll be confirmed.
Yeah.
But with this bunch, they will.
I mean, the same thing when we talked about the UN ambassador. I mean, how's that going to happen? But it probably will, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have other items to discuss. We will do that. We have Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Joe Bonilla, and Libby Post here at the panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Just a quick reminder about year-end giving, and it's almost the end of the year. We only have, 2 weeks left, and it's a good time if you are thinking of giving to a nonprofit of your choice. Well, then we would love to be your choice or a part of your choice.
Can I pile on there, Joe? You know, I've heard something that's very disturbing because as you know, the president now has made many more people file the short form, and the people who file the longer form are the ones who generally take the deductions. So there's a sense that we won't be getting any money. What we're finding, however, is we're getting a lot of money. We're getting money from the good people who are filing short forms and those who are going to be doing the deductions, filing the long form. You know, people love the radio station. They're going to do what they have to do for it. And you make a good point, Joe.
I'm not cynical enough to believe that these tax changes are going to destroy giving and destroy philanthropy. I think people want to support the organizations and the causes like WMC that they believe in, and they will continue to do it.
You can imagine the Metropolitan Opera
not being
able to continue because people were filing a short form.
That's right. I mean, you know, we've got here, there's so many organizations in the Capital District.
And, sure.
you know, I think people believe in philanthropy and they believe in the organizations that they give to, so they will continue to do it.
So if you are so inclined, and why wouldn't you be, it's WAMC.org, WAMC.org, and that is how you do it, and we thank you very much.
We do.
It's very important for us, and all that money goes into the lockbox, and that means our February drive is that much shorter, so it really is an important thing for us as well. All right, Alan, you have a new batch of letters. Let's do those.
I do, Joe. Joseph writes, indictments. Good morning, panel. Regarding the idea that sitting president is unindictable based on the premise he's too busy running the country, I submit the counterproposal that since Mr. Trump is not running the country but rather just watching TV, Twitter, and playing golf, he is eminently indictable and ought to be subject to the consequences of his actions. What say you?
Well, I heard Neil Katyal, who wrote up the regulations and served the regulations for the special counsel investigation, and served as solicitor general for a period of time. And he was making the point that the DOJ memos don't necessarily say that you can't indict the president, but maybe he won't go to trial in the next 2 years, right? You could indict him and then try him after he loses the general election primary.
Good lawyerly answer, I think. On the other hand, I always say if you want to win an argument, you take it to its most absurd place. So there's Donald Trump doing what he said he could do, shooting somebody on Fifth Avenue. Shooting somebody with a revolver on Fifth Avenue. You mean you're not going to indict him? What if it was his wife or one of his wives? I mean, you know, come on. It's ridiculous.
Agree.
Immigration, says Ricky. Hi, panel. What about the immigrants that arrive by plane? Couldn't they be potentially dangerous as well? I don't hear anyone talking about them.
Well, actually, it's interesting. I was on a tour of the Customs and Border Protection, which is different than Customs and Border Patrol, that patrols our land borders. Customs and Border Protection at JFK, which is one of the most busiest airports in the world, has a very sophisticated system to vet and to make sure that anybody who's coming or leaving through the international port is heavily screened. They've done a really great job. And what's unfortunate for the people on the front lines of that particular issue, and that's really focused on terrorism, not immigration, is that they can't have a bad day at work. And we never get to celebrate when they do catch someone who has malintentions in the United States. So they're doing a lot of great work behind the scenes at JFK. And I personally got the opportunity to witness it. So I can say with authority that those types of ports of entry are very well regulated.
Well, Sarah, that's terrific coming from you, because I love the idea that you're saying doing a really great job, because people may confuse the fact that you're a great immigration lawyer and advocate, but you don't want to see bad people coming into the United States.
Absolutely not. And I have to reiterate this. Customs and Border Protection is a highly sophisticated organization and very different than the atrocities we're seeing from Customs and Border Patrol, where they're allowing children to die in their custody. Mm-hmm. So we have to I know that's kind of like a subtle difference, and they have the same initials, CBP, but it's important that we recognize that those are two different functions of the government.
Are you the only one, or am I the only one, who, when we come from an international trip and we have to go through next to that little booth there and the guy's mm-hmm. looking at me?
Oh, yeah.
I always get the idea, wow, that isn't a nice look. You know, he looks up and down.
They have to treat everybody the same.
Well, but they don't.
They don't.
I mean, when we came back from our one trip to Europe, I got expedited the X thing, but Lynn didn't. Mm-hmm. So we waited. And there was this little, what I would call little pisha, you know, behind the glass. There was a
we'll let it go, Libby, okay, but it's marginal.
It's one of the seven words you can't say.
Okay. This young guy grilling a clearly Hispanic couple.
Yeah.
And making their lives miserable. And it's the power trip that people take when they have these kinds of positions, because they have no power in their real lives, so they do it.
Well, that's just an interesting thing that you're saying. I mean, do you think that when people apply for jobs, that their base character has something to do with who's attracted to which job?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Me too.
Yeah.
And in fact, I know there have been studies about that in police.
Yeah, we find that with police all the time.
Well, and that's why it's so hard to change the culture of these organizations that have these deep roots in sort of toxic masculinity. But they're working on it. Certain people are. Not Customs and Border Patrol, though. Go crazy on them.
Okay, so we heard from Joyce from Argyle Wear.
Socks.
Everybody wear socks. Okay, here we go. Yeah.
Good morning, panel.
Well, that's good to hear, though.
Our administration insists the wall is crucial for safety. Are they currently doing the preliminary work so they can hit the ground running once funding is approved? In other words, obtaining property owner easements, permission to build on the Indian reservation in Arizona, surveys, blueprints, etc. Does Congress have to approve building on a reservation? Didn't we go through this under George W. Bush? Thanks, Joyce from Argyle.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Cards Against Humanity bought a portion of the property in order to obstruct that portion of the wall. There are so many problems with this border wall, including the fact that it's just a security fallacy. It's not going to stop the flow of drugs. The drugs are coming. The drugs are coming in from China. Fentanyl, the one that we're worried about the most, is not flowing through. People transporting it over a land border.
East, west, north, south, it doesn't matter.
It comes all over the place. And that's so focusing on the sources of the drug cartels and movements is a much more productive use of funding than building a wall.
Right, because the wall's not going to get built so deep down it's going to block the tunnels.
Well, but you're arguing the substance, which is probably silly for all of us because it isn't about substance. It's about optics. It's about what this president is throwing to his base.
It's the wall now, and there'll be a moat later. You know?
It's called isolationism.
Right. Which makes the Democratic counteroffer of one point whatever billion just even all the more silly.
It really does.
I don't even know why you'd play that card.
I don't either, and I don't understand why it was Senator Schumer who floated that, not Pelosi. And that came out the same week that everybody was trying to take down Pelosi. So
I think they play the politics of it all, and it's good cop, bad cop, carrot, stick. You know, she certainly holds the stick.
Yeah. I hope that they have a coordinated strategy.
Yeah.
Kevin from Melrose.
Yes. Place?
5300.
What did you say?
I said Kevin from Melrose, because when we were growing up, there used to be this thing on, which always said 5300. Melrose 5300.
Oh.
It was an ad for something. I don't remember what. Yeah. I tried dialing it one day. Nothing doing
it. And
me.
When Sarah and I were growing up, there was a show called Melrose Place.
It was. I wasn't allowed to watch it.
So
Kevin from Melrose Place. Democrats need to run by this playbook for the next 2 years. State the obvious at every chance. Tell the American people Republicans had full control of government and still could not get the wall, and in capital letters, assuming there will be some fruit to the Mueller report, tell the American people they could have gone the impeachment route but wanted to save the country from chaos since Republicans won't vote them out in the Senate. It's a win either way, says Kevin.
I would just like to point out
that I watched Melrose Place, the original, and you probably watched the reboot.
Oh, wow.
Well, there is an age difference there. I don't want to indicate that it was the same time frame.
I didn't watch any of it.
Okay.
No, it was stupid television. It was
exactly.
Yeah.
It was all angsty and great.
I watched other kind of stupid television.
Okay. So Laura says feds always get paid. The employees always are paid after the fact. Last Christmas shutdown in the 90s was a huge extra holiday paid vacation. More recent ones paid too, and that's best from Laura. Thank you, Laura. And then finally, we've heard from Russ, who says declining returns. The remaining Republicans have big bet on the next 2 years of Trump, and we'll see a return on that investment similar to the investors in the Trump casino. And that's Russ from Menands, where
Libby lives.
I don't know what goes on there.
Yeah. I could say some other stuff, but I'll leave it at that.
We were talking about the wall and immigration. So the Trump administration significantly stepped up its arrests and deportations of undocumented immigrants last year, according to government data that was released on Friday, even as other parts of the president's hardline immigration agenda have been blocked by Congress and the courts. Immigration and Customs Enforcement said it arrested 59,000 foreigners during the 2018 fiscal year that ended September 30th, an increase of 11% from the previous year.
That's the story they want. I was disgusted reading that coverage because it didn't break down who those people are. It lumps everybody together. And for those who want to assume that removing undocumented people is a good thing, they want to see those numbers go up. And that actually plays right into to Trump's strategy. Look at all these people that I'm getting rid of, these bad people.
And when you say bad people, and I want you to go on, I just want to add this line, which is, again, part of the article, 90% of the people arrested had criminal convictions, which again plays into the narrative.
It does, and those criminal convictions are not serious crimes. The top three are things like entering the country after you've already been ordered deported. That's one immigration crime that's actually in the code. Things like traffic violations. And then I think the number three most arrested or individual, the conviction, is DUIs, which are serious, I understand. But in the grand scheme of things, these aren't hardened criminals. And they lump all these people together. And you know who else is swept up in that 10%? Children, families, New Yorkers, veterans. We have a lot of people who are being deported who shouldn't be.
Look what they're trying to do to the Vietnamese who came here before we settled the war. I mean, it's just, it's criminal. We turned these people's lives upside down. We killed hundreds of thousands of their family and their friends and their neighbors. And now we're going to, and these grandmas have been here for generations, right? At least 40 years. And now we want to send them back. It makes absolutely no sense.
Stephen Miller has absolute control of the White House.
That's right. He does. Yeah. I think he's really the one in charge.
R writes, the narrative. We Dems should not be surprised by Trump relatively stable poll numbers. We have abandoned the narrative to Trump and Twitter. In the age of listening to news you like, they don't hear / understand the bad stuff. We need a, quote, designated hitter Twitter to engage Trump's tweets. Awfuling is not a strategy.
All right, going to pause you there. We have to go over to a break. We will be back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Panel at WAMC.org is how you get a hold of us. Panel at WAMC.org. Libby Post is here. Joe Bonilla, Sarah Rogerson, Alan Chartok with letters, and we welcome you as panel at WAMC.org.
Jeff writes on the important discussion of the morning, Melrose 5-5300. Was the phone number in the ad jingle for Saks Quality Furniture Store. I remember, too, and I'm a mere 67 years old. Hmm. Well, thank you for that.
And now it's probably some other person who's getting all kinds of calls. Wondering why are these people calling me now?
No, but the thing is, we don't use those acronyms anymore. We don't use
Riverside 9.
Yeah, or any of that anymore.
Yeah, but it would be the M on your phone.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. But then you'd have to go and figure it out.
My parents had the same number for 50 years. I tried it the other day. And they said this is a reserved number for Con Edison in New York.
Wow.
And Joe says, shutdown blame. Trump said he will take the blame for a shutdown, but he has never taken the blame for anything.
Right.
Who will be blamed for if the shutdown hits the fan?
Well, historically, I mean, the legislature has been blamed more often than not than the president. But I think in this particular case, you know, given it's a different environment, especially with the president saying that he will take the blame, you know, I think the American people will hopefully see that to be the case if it does happen.
You think the 40% will? I don't.
Probably not.
I think the best people for him to blame are the lame duck Republicans.
Yeah, he will.
The loser Republicans.
The loser Republicans. Yeah, he'll blame them. Yeah. And everybody can be mad about it, but it doesn't really have any impact because they're gone.
And Debbie says from North Adams where... Beats me. Okay.
Where the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts is.
Yes, and Mass Mocha.
Right.
Ooh, I love Mass Mocha.
Yeah, it's terrific. And Debbie says, ICE, why are immigration and customs under the same umbrella? Customs is a business matter, and immigration is not. Professor?
All of it got lumped together after 9/11. The Department of Immigration and Naturalization Service, INS, former INS, got lumped in with a host of other things in the Department of Homeland Security and the Department of Justice. It's just part of the criminalization of immigration. And until Congress prioritizes comprehensive immigration reform, we're stuck with that system and linking together business and immigration and terrorism all in the same bucket.
And Barbara says, pay during government shutdown. I was a federal employee for 32 years and retired 11 years ago. The few times the government actually shut down were always paid. We were always paid through, and we were always threatened with late payment. The greater burden was borne by clients when case processing was delayed by the shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And Diana says, yes, federal government workers are paid after a shutdown. Shutdowns are one of the most absurd actions the government can take. They're very costly and don't result in the actual cessation of work. Each agency has many, quote, essential employees, mostly management, that continue to work. I'm a 30-year federal employee, retired. We had many shutdowns. Most were short, and there was no interruption in pay. A memorable shutdown in 1995 lasted a couple of weeks, and we were paid retroactively. And that's Diana from Greenfield. Where?
I mean, obviously, the employees getting paid is important, and I'm not saying it isn't important. But there's also the services that you depend on, food stamps. That you lose for that time.
Right.
And you certainly can get back to some normalcy when it returns. However, there is the damage that's done while it is shut down.
Health care. Social Security happens, and I think Medicare is funded, but Medicaid not necessarily.
And then there's a backlog. ACA, right. I mean, an immigration court shut down, and they are already way far behind. So that, you know, there is an impact. But I'm glad that I want to appreciate Diana's 30 years of service as a civil servant. I think we're relying on them to keep the boat above water right now.
So let's talk about health care. The ruling by a federal judge in Texas striking down the Affordable Care Act has injected a powerful wave of uncertainty about recent changes woven into the U.S. healthcare system that touched nearly all Americans in the industry that makes up one-sixth of the economy. This from the Washington Post. The opinion, if upheld on appeal, would upend the health insurance industry, the way doctors and the hospitals function, and the ability of millions of Americans to access treatments that they need to combat serious disease. Parts of the law that would need to be unwound include a no-charge preventative service for older Americans on Medicare, allowing patients to keep children on their plans through the age of 26, a variety of efforts to rein in prescription drug costs, and even requirements that some restaurants post calorie counts. It affects almost everyone in America, according to a specialist in health and law at Washington and Lee University. The court decision also sets them an awkward juggling act for the Republican Party, balancing President Trump's gleeful tweets over the court's decision against a perception that the GOP is threatening insurance that covers nearly 20 million Americans through new private health plans and an expansion of Medicaid.
It all comes down to John Roberts. That's what it comes down to. He found a way the last time by saying, since it was really a tax, that it was legal. In the meantime, the Republicans, hearing that, go and change that part of the law. And so now, will Roberts find another reason to save all of those millions of Americans who otherwise would have no health care? And by the way, while I'm on the subject, are you telling me of that 40% or so that there aren't people who's going to lose health care, or whose kids are going to lose health care, or who have conditions that would be covered under the law? It seems to me, you know, that's a good question.
Well, I just remember the best photo during the whole Obamacare fight was somebody who was against it with a sign that says, "Government, don't touch my Medicaid or Medicare." It's like, well, where do you think it comes from?
Right.
You know? And the thing is that 40% in those poor rural areas, those are the people who are dependent on aid from the government. They're dependent on Medicaid. They're dependent on welfare. They're dependent on food stamps.
Right.
And they're going to go after all. They want to get rid of all of that. So ultimately, it'll come back to bite them. Whether they recognize and can connect the dots still remains to be seen.
But certainly, I mean, this would be appealed up to the Supreme Court. And obviously, the only difference between, you know, the 2013 decision and now is that we have Kavanaugh on the court now versus Kennedy. But even though Kennedy still voted for the and he was in the minority at that point. I mean, this only amplifies maybe the push for Roberts. Maybe.
Well, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch.
Right. But, I mean, Gorsuch only replaced Scalia. But, I mean, now we have somebody who's a little bit more, far more right.
Right.
Well, it's hard for me to believe that this Chief Justice, John Roberts, doesn't have the, you know, the pull to get people over to his side, at least one of those guys.
But not only that, look, they decided not to hear the Planned Parenthood cases.
That's right.
They could decide.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that this will probably get overturned as it goes up.
Yeah, right. I don't think it'll make it to the Supreme Court.
No, I don't think it'll make it, and they'll decide not to hear the challenge.
Right. Even the Wall Street Journal, the editorial board came out saying no one opposes Obamacare more than we do, but a federal judge's ruling on Friday that the law is unconstitutional is likely to be overturned on appeal and may boomerang politically on Republicans. Right. And I couldn't agree more. It's a bad opinion.
Well, yes, but you say it may not get to the Supreme Court. It will. It's going to get to the Supreme Court, not that they'll have to make a judgment, but they'll have to make a judgment assuming, Sarah, that you're right and that it's reversed in a lower court not to take the case, right? Not to grant cert.
Well, assuming it even makes it to the point where cert is requested, right? This is a federal district court ruling. It has to go through the circuit court. So the Fifth Circuit isn't great for us on that. But you're right. It could make it to the cert level of the Supreme Court, not for a while. It really depends on politically whether or not they're going to push it, right? Who wants to pay the lawyers who are continuing to fight this? As long as they pay them, they'll fight it. But if it becomes politically non-viable for them and things, the law moves a lot slower than politics do. And so cases get brought and dropped with the wind, especially on these sort of hot button political issues. Good luck trying to unwind all of this based on this opinion. It's just not. It's what rarely do you see these sort of splashy opinions. We've seen a ton of them from judges on immigration issues, right? And nobody says, "Oh, that's just wrong on its face." That opinion is just doesn't pass muster. But, and you hear it from conservative type groups.
But this is a Republican judge. You know, there are a lot of people who say, you know, there are no Republican judges, there are no Democratic judges, there were just judges. We're looking at the law. But come on now, you know, Sarah, as you know full well. Lawyers are always judge shopping for the right judge.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Fifth Circuit is conservative. The Ninth Circuit is progressive. But we've seen the Ninth Circuit rule in really unfortunate ways. The Ninth Circuit denied unaccompanied kids in immigration court the right to counsel. So that was a shock. And that was supposedly coming from, you know, a progressive bench. So I'm a little more hesitant, maybe because I'm a law professor. I'd like to believe that my profession has more integrity than it reveals itself to have sometimes. And I'd like to believe that our right-leaning Supreme Court will not ultimately carry out the wishes of this extremist president. But there is something to be said for judicial, you know, judges behaving well and in the interest of the law. And not in the interest of politics. But certainly, I mean, this judge seems to have done that, not only with the opinion, but the timing as well.
Right.
On a Friday after the midterms, as we're going into a potential shutdown. I mean, it could have been calculated.
I would like to disassociate myself with your good words about the lawyers. Just kidding. Don't write me any letters.
Go ahead. There's plenty of good lawyers out there.
Oh, by the way,
give me a list.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I've got binders full of
lawyers. Oh, there it is.
Lawyers. There you go.
I couldn't agree with you more, Sarah.
So let's talk in our remaining moments here about Russia. There is reporting from the Washington Post, although the Times also has a story on this as well in their own reporting. But so two different reports. But the report draft, which was obtained by the Washington Post, is the first to analyze the millions of posts provided by major technology firms to the Senate Intelligence Committee. What this basically says is that any any possible social media avenue that the Russians, that we have, the Russians used in some way, shape, or form.
And
in
continue
trying,
to use it.
And yes, and continue to use it in trying to sway the election. The report prepared for the Senate that provides the most sweeping analysis yet of Russia's disinformation campaign around the 2016 election found the operation used every major social media platform to deliver words, images, and videos tailored to voters' interests to help elect President Trump and worked even harder to support him while in office. The report, a draft of which was obtained by the Washington Post, is the first to study the millions of posts provided by major technology firms to the Senate Intelligence Committee led by Senator Richard Burr, who you will recall is a Republican from North Carolina, as well as the ranking Democrat, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia. The bipartisan panel has not said whether it endorses the findings. It plans to release it publicly along with another study later this week.
When I read this, I was just flabbergasted by the amount of, it's infiltration. That's exactly what they infiltrated, every social media platform, but so sophisticated and so in tune with people's values and what will push their buttons. They were even able to, generate discontent within the Black community and be able to, push people's buttons there and talk about racism. And I was really shocked by how sophisticated it was and how well they were able to mimic what we say here in America. And Khrushchev said, we'll be able to destroy the United States from within. And that's what they've been able to do.
We built the infrastructure, and that's what we did, unfortunately, in terms of like advertising the PR industry, that we were able to really distill down things in a behavioral sense from mm-hmm. what you click, what you look at, everything right. like that. So we created the monster ourselves. And Russia, unfortunately, was able to use that monster that we created against our own interests.
I like to think of the continuity between the old Soviet Union and the present.
Yeah, I don't think there's much difference.
Russia.
Yeah.
Roselle and I were treated to watching the death of Stalin the other night on the, and they can be as buffoon-like as everybody else can. But when you're a dictatorship, and which they are, there's no question about it right now, you have a lot more ability to do this kind mm-hmm. of thing than if you had stopgaps, people who were watching each other.
And let's not forget, Putin was a major player in the KGB, and they,
Colonel.
Used all of that mind control stuff. So.
To something Libby just mentioned, but in this article in the Times about another report that I alluded to in the first article, in some cases, Facebook ads were targeted at users who had shown interest in particular topics, including Black history, the Black Panther Party, and Malcolm X. So the targeting of African Americans specifically. Mm-hmm. Also, the operation tried to suppress the Democratic turnout and unleashed a blizzard of posts on Instagram that rivaled or exceeded its Facebook operations, according to this report. That's pretty incredible.
Right. And the Instagram will draw, using Instagram will depress the youth vote because that's who
right.
really uses Instagram. I mean, I don't know if they went to Snapchat, but.
And we're all incredible, willing participants.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's social. We're social media obsessed.
Yeah.
We're in a capitalistic society that where the capitalism drives a lot of the social mm-hmm. media. Buy this, do this, be this way. Even the things that aren't ads. Even just the behavior, there's commercial behavior happening, and we're all engaging in it.
Look, you go and Google for X, an ad for X will show up in your Facebook feed.
Right.
It's just that simple.
Well, even worse is that you can say something, and then it will show up on your Facebook feed.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. It's.
And we're still playing around with that stuff.
Yeah, and we're just giving away all this data in a flood for free.
Yeah, but I use it.
Yeah.
For my work. You use it for your work. It works.
It does.
It does work.
It's targeted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can target. I've been very successful in targeting. So.
Well, I think that at least Facebook has drawn a lot of heat for this. And we saw Sheryl Sandberg having to admit some uncomfortable truths about what they knew and what they didn't know during the election. And so I hope what this is doing is inspiring all social media account executives to sort of pay more attention to how these things are happening and put in place regulations, self-regulate to make sure it doesn't happen again.
You may think it and you may hope it, but do you really believe it's going to happen?
No, because the incentives are all screwed up because we all want to buy stuff. Especially right
me
now.
Too. I saw.
Right, but I mean, it comes down to this. I mean, when we first started building roads in this country, we eventually figured out we need a traffic light, and we need the same thing in this. Yeah, so that's what we need to figure out.
I saw a beautiful long neck banjo on the internet today, and it's what I really want for Christmas, Roselle.
Just putting that out there?
Yeah.
Yeah, just putting it out there.
To your listeners?
Yeah. Well, I don't want my listeners to pay for it. I want my wife to pay for it.
Yeah. But now on your phone, you'll probably find, links and articles for long neck banjos.
No, I already know about that.
Oh.
I have four already.
Yeah, but the competitors now in Russia. Russia wants to
know this information, too. Right. Make that link if you
want. Right, exactly.
That's a very good point. They sell balalaikas over there.
Hmm? All right. We are... That seems like a fine place to end, doesn't it?
I don't even know what a balalaika is.
That's a sort of a Russian folk instrument.
Oh, okay. Oh. I'll look it up. And then they'll try to sell me one.
Yeah, that's right. And then the ads will not cease. Libby Post, Joe Bonilla, Sarah Rogerson, and Alan Chartok, thank you all very, very much. We will be back after this.